Hello, welcome back to the NBS podcast with me, Alex, joined as ever by the lovely Sam.
Hello.
And Lucy.
Hello.
Oh, this week's been, this podcast is going to be a bit dated, so you're going to know roughly when we were recording, but this week's been interesting. This week, the news has just been dominated by billionaires, Elon Musk's acquisition of Twitter.
Well, it's not just his acquisition, because that was a couple of weeks ago at this point. It was his catastrophic handling of the company. All of this is he put something on Twitter months ago about essentially purchasing it, right? And then he tried to back out, and then he got forced to purchase it for about $44 billion or whatever. So obviously that all completed a couple of weeks ago. And he's now got his hands on things, and the genius he is has decided to implement a load of policy changes and getting rid of a load of staff, etc. So sort of the bit we wanted to talk about with this purchase is obviously he's reduced the moderation and brought back a load of people who were banned from the platform on free speech grounds.
And so this quite simple idea that free speech is obviously everyone should have free speech. But actually, obviously, as we'll allude to later, probably a bit more in the podcast, but you know, it's very much a, this isn't quite as black and white as you think it is.
Elon, so you've not tuned in for a tech podcast like this.
Exactly.
So I think, famously, obviously the whole saga of his acquisitions being like prior to him actually taking over has been a bit of a thing, but like he was sort of talking about, he was unhappy. There was like one of these publications, the Babylon Bee, which is sort of like a right-wing satirical site, but they got kicked off because they named a prominent like transgender woman in the US, like a politician, as man of the year in a thing, obviously, as you know, classic transphobia there. And Elon Musk wasn't happy about that. And part of when he took over, I guess one of his first tweets that he put out was, you know, comedy's legal again on Twitter and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, and that's just absolutely plummeted everything. Like, all the advertising and everything are pulling out because of this. Everyone can purchase a blue check mark verification, and there's no difference between that and an actual one.
Of course, that has changed because of controversies now. So
So recently, in the last couple of days, there's been a lot of sort of troll accounts who have been they've been impersonating like big companies and big famous people. So there was a load of stuff with Lockheed Martin that's plummeted Lockheed Martin's stock price. There was an American pharmaceutical company where somebody put out a tweet saying penicillin's for now free. That plummeted their stock price. So there's going to be legal challenges and potentially suing of Elon now for that. There's been prominent right-wing asshole Ben Shapiro has been parody accounts of him being gay, which is hilarious because I know that he would get right under his skin for that. There's been a lot of these sort of dummy accounts coming out, which has just made sort of what he's called parody. And the impersonation is now rife on the platform.
But I think what the angle we want to take really with this and our discussion on it is where does this leave us, obviously as trans people, non-binary people, and our kind of safety and how we view the internet, you know, what we're taking. Because Twitter obviously has lost a lot of moderation now, as Sam was saying, lots of parody accounts and things. But it sort of demeans the whole platform, where there might have been sort of some safeguarding, it has kind of diminished somewhat.
Well, I mean, the platform itself has always been a bit...
it's a bit of a dumpster
bit
fire.
Toxic.
It's a bit
toxic.
There's
been a lot of... It's one of those platforms that there's a lot of ability to... for it to become an echo chamber for conspiracy theories and sort of opinions. It's not just, say, the right or the left. It's... everyone is susceptible to it to being an echo chamber, because with the algorithms and everything that they've got built into these social media platforms, it only really shows you content that you view right? So you've always got this as being an option of it being an echo chamber, and you're sort of talking to yourself a bit on Twitter. Yeah. The issue with it now is now you've lost that moderation. Those views and everything are going to get more extreme. And you're already starting to see this. I think it was the rise in racist language was quite a lot after Elon said comedy is now legal.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. It's that empowerment of these views. But I guess as someone who loved, I used to use Twitter loads when I was like maybe between the ages of like 18 and like 21, and I sort of just. And then it just became the account that I complained at brands at because they'd respond quicker. It'd be like, at Sainsbury's, where's my order? Or whatever like that.
It's so easy to vent on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I think, as Sam was saying as well, the algorithm is really good at checking. So I'm on Twitter quite a lot because I do follow politics, and I find it easy, quite an easy way to digest a lot of it. But the way in which Twitter shows you all of these tweets, you can very easily get angry, riled up. And the trouble is, if you're angry and riled up, then millions of other people are going to be angry and riled up as well. And it's just this platform, like you say, a dustbin. I have seen some quite positive stories on Twitter, but they are often over, you know, saturated with a lot of negativity. And I think just broadening it out into a wider point about the online community, I think we really wanted to just sort of talk a bit about how our experiences online, what we do to kind of what we've seen, what we do to help kind of bring up trans people and ourselves as well, make ourselves feel a bit better, because the online world can be really negative and bad, and especially directed towards trans people, non-binary people, and just the queer community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, yeah, it's a really good point. And I think, yeah, I think that's the thing, is if you're listening to this, you may be trans, non-binary. We know we get some like reporting stats from like people who listen to Spotify. So yeah, very creepy. So we know obviously there are people who listen who are non-binary.
We promise we're not in your window.
We're just making sure we're the right people. But we also know that some people, I guess, if you're listening to this, hopefully you're you're not trans. Hopefully an ally. So yeah, you probably, yeah, maybe, you know, yeah, we can try and address, you know, some practical tips.
I think also we wanted to talk a bit about the misinformation around, you know, and some of the misinterpretations, because we often see, so my personal experience on Twitter is a lot of the discourse is actually based on very poor data and misinformation from outlets. Like, I think we were talking pre-podcast about The Times and other news papers in the UK. And I'm aware there's lots of other outlets in the world as well that just love to stoke up the fire. And so we would quite like to just sort of talk about how our experiences online, talk about like what we do to try and keep ourselves positive, and offer some sort of articles or some information at the end of the podcast as well, just to help you. So if you have any allies or anyone who wants to learn a bit more as well, we can hopefully give them some resources at the end.
So you talk about like, yeah, it's a lot of the rhetoric on Twitter, especially around trans issues, is misinformation. Personally, so I guess I imagine we all have different opinions. How does someone who is either trans or non-binary or an ally, what do you think should be done in terms of engaging with that? Is there, or should you engage with it, or should you just allow it to exist there? Like, what's your feelings on that?
The issue with a lot of this rhetoric, right? So Twitter is quite a cesspit of TERFs, right? So the amount of times I've gone on Twitter, checked the trending hashtags, and I stand with JK Rowling is on there. And then you look at it, and it's just an echo chamber of TERF rhetoric. It's insane. The issue I have with a lot of this is, if you do try and engage them and try and teach someone who has a misinformed opinion, a lot of the time on these websites, they won't listen to you because there are other people who also share that opinion. So
they're bolstered almost, aren't they? By their own bubble.
But they won't. Even if you provide evidence and prove it, like, hang on, this is a sourced article. This is coming from, I don't know, the Institute of Medical Science or something. I don't even know if that's real, but like, as a point, if you give an article from an accredited source, half the time they won't even bother reading it. They just want you to go and do work for them to validate their opinion, right? So they'll as Lucy was saying, they'll show articles that have a lot of misinformation, that have no sourcing behind them, or has come from a poorly or a not peer-reviewed paper or something like this, just to prove their viewpoint. People on the internet in general, they always find ways of proving that they're right. That isn't just Twitter, that is everything.
Facebook's a really bad one as well. There's lots of Facebook groups where misinformation is shared. And I know, I believe Meta, so the bigger company behind Facebook and Instagram, are always trying to look at ways of sort of verificating or sort of verifying or looking at ways of making sure that information is stated as to whether it is accurate enough or not. But there's still so much work to do. And I think it's so easy to target, you know, you just get a small sample size of a poll, or you word a question very carefully. And like Sam says, if people aren't thinking critically about that thing, they're not properly looking at the sources, it's very easy to fleece or convince people one way or the other and to stoke divisions in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, I guess what would you say to, because I guess like the thing is, if you're in that rhetoric, sometimes you're also, there's sometimes the belief, I guess, within that community, that within the TERF community, that you're the reason why you don't have the peer-reviewed stuff is because actually it's like a, I don't know, it's almost conspiracy theory, isn't it? It's like that there's the, that actually society is doing everything they can to erode the rights of other people by prioritizing trans people, and therefore they're acting
the way they always do it, right, is they always frame trans women or trans femme people as predators, and they always say that, oh, we're protecting women and sex-based rights, and oh, you're like, when they come to do talk about trans men or anything, they're saying, oh, but you're mutilating yourself, or they're mutilating our young women or anything like this. It's all rubbish. It's just they have in their head a misinformed opinion of what feminism is, right? Feminism as a concept is equality for all. So they want women to be on the same level as men and have the same rights. Now, a lot of people have taken that and only done like the cis white sort of colonialist feminism, where anything that isn't like a middle class white woman, they don't like. And that also extends out to being trans. So you will see a lot of TERFs are actually like middle class, middle age white women. Occasionally you'll get someone else outside of that who associates with that group a lot more. But going back, right, so in the summer there was Trans Pride in London. We all attended this. I think we spoke about this previously. But that was attended by, 20,000 people? But on the same weekend, oh no, it wasn't that one. There was a protest outside Downing Street in April, I think.
Yeah,
we attended that.
Yeah.
It was a couple of thousand people. It wasn't as big as Trans Pride in London. But on that same weekend, J.K. Rowling and her TERF mates had a really upper-class lunch and posted that all over Twitter. And you think, how out of touch are you that you're going to this fancy restaurant and having a fancy meal when there's thousands of people on the street who massively outnumber you?
Yeah.
And it just goes to show that they're a very vocal minority.
Yeah.
I just want to say something on this. So J.K. Rowling, let's take J.K. Rowling for example. J.K. Rowling is now making money and selling books on being the kind of personality that she can be on online, stoking some of those fears and divisions. And I do think there is a case for J.K. Rowling in that she probably has had a bad experience in the past. She definitely had a bad experience with an ex-partner. And I think some of the concern of the sort of the TERF crowd, some of them have actually had quite bad experiences with men. But obviously to convert that into a fear of all men who might then transition into women is quite far-fetched and ridiculous, really, because at the end of the day, you're not going to stop a predator from going into a toilet.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no way of stopping any man from going into a woman's toilets, which just blows that argument out the water anyway.
Yeah.
But the other thing I just want to say is that Alex is right. So just going back to your point about what do you kind of say? So if you're listening and you're an ally or you're someone who wants to understand more, obviously we are quite passionate about we're quite anti-turf. But at going outside of our bubble a little bit or our feelings, you obviously have to reason with a lot of people. And I think, like Alex was saying, it's really hard to convince someone who thinks that the state is against them or something is against them. But what I will say is that from personal experience, when I've seen people being able to relate to someone who they know has come out, or they have a personal experience of it that's positive and good, then actually their opinion changes very quickly.
Yeah, you see a lot of people who sort of they come at it from a point of view of, oh, that I've got no association with that, so I don't care sort of situation. But as soon as someone they know comes out as trans, or even just they come out as LGBT, they're immediately looking if they actually love the person and they're after, what's best for them. They'll always immediately do research and then find out that a lot of their opinions are based off of misinformation, because they just don't know. There's no point for them to go and research it or find out everything, because they have no need to.
And this is the distinction between online versus in real life. And a lot of TERFs exist online. A lot of people who are negative, you can even expand it out from TERFs and say people who are just naturally quite edgy or want to, or afraid or concerned for whatever reason, afraid of change, trolls. All these people, they exist online. And this is coming back to our point about that kind of, the moderation on online and how we feel as trans people. And why I think it is actually important sometimes just to remember that a lot of the stuff that's happening generally is online. And now we do see examples of, in America, of quite divisive society, people being attacked. But in the UK, at least, as we are, it's not too bad. And actually, just focus. My advice would be to a lot of people who are maybe in our position and reading all this stuff online, is to focus on the people that you see every day in your life, and just try and, if you're coming out to them or you're having positive interactions with them, that's what matters, really, because you're never going to meet troll 6186 from Newcastle.
Well, you might, but it might
be very different.
Yeah. I think so one thing I'll to just back this up, because some people, I think, especially living in, if you live in the UK, you might feel it's this constant thing. So there was a study by Stonewall that came out, they did it in conjunction with YouGov and Opinion, so political research companies, and it was about what did the British public really think about trans people, was the thing, and how they did it. So they did a YouGov poll, and they gave the public a list of 16 issues, obviously covering everything, economy, equality, like racial equality, things like all the sort of major issues, I guess, inside it. And trans issues was one of them. And six out of the 16 issues, trans issues were the least important, which, trans issues was presented not in a positive or negative way, but I guess it shows there's that. I think only 2% of the general public identified trans people as their top concern. And they actually, so even amongst conservative members, so the similar thing to 500 conservative members. They gave them 28 issues. Trans people and trans participation in sport out of these 28 issues came 26th and 27th respectively. So I think it's that case where I think people will have opinions on it, and it's going to link to what my advice is. So we spoke about, obviously, how do you address when you see all this awful stuff online? And I think, going and trying to address with that person maybe is a bit of a black hole. But I think if you're really passionate about something, or you have a strong view on this, or you want to speak out, there are other ways that you can direct the energy. And I, one thing that I really like is there's, I've definitely noticed a lot more accounts on social media where they sort of call out the rhetoric that's going around and talk about why it's wrong, but they don't do it. Don't do it in a derogatory way. You're not there to make fun of a person. But I think if there's some misinformation, you can use your Twitter. You can use if it's on TikTok, you can duet it or you can stitch it. If you can quote tweet it on Twitter, can't you? And maybe just address it. Just say, oh, I could, like, this rhetoric's going round and this is why it's wrong. And you know what? Your follower base or the people you're reaching are people who hopefully are either wholly bought or willing to be bought onto your point of view. And I think there is that thing where I don't think it's not your job to go and address misinformation online. That's the job. The social media company should be doing a lot more. But if you want to go and direct your energy, maybe just use it there. And is it this Mattix V or something like they it's like someone who's they're within the LGBT community, but they always sort of take sort of prominent news stories and they do like
ContraPoints as well.
Yeah, and ContraPoints. Yeah, and I think that's a really nice way of doing it because it's quite removed.
It's not too much because obviously like sometimes if you present a debate or an argument and you've got a really quite personal stake in it, obviously it's quite hard to disseminate, isn't it?
Yeah,
but I imagine this person is the same, but like ContraPoints, when I've watched them, really good, very quite factually based observation.
And I think that's I notice actually often when these things happen, a lot of allies like share that content. But I think if you want to do it, address it like that, address the issue, address why it's wrong, maybe address the misconceptions. And as I said, don't be rude to anyone else. Like, well, I know they're going to be rude to you, but I guess there's that thing you're trying to take people on your journey and you're trying to there and. Ultimately, yeah, these people are, you know.
And if they're not listening and they're really not a good influence on your life, you know, especially friends or whatever, sometimes it's just a case of saying, look, I just don't think this is working. Because if they're not going to support you, then it is good just to take a step back sometimes as well.
Yeah, sometimes the best thing to do for your mental health is just to cut something like that out of your life, whether that's on social media and just liberally using the block button or whether it's someone in real life who... maybe you got on with prior to coming out as trans or whatever, but if they're not good for your mental health, they're not supportive and they're quite toxic.
Yeah.
No matter how it is, cut them out of your life. It's not worth the hassle and the effort.
But just remember, going back to the original point, that online doesn't equal real life. Mm. And like Alex said, the issues that people face at the minute, economy, whatever, you know, trans people, it's not that they don't care about them, but it's just, and like I say, if there's individual cases where people are coming out, you know, generally quite positive, I think. But it's not their priority.
Yeah. Yeah.
But these people are always trying to make it their priority. And I think as so far, anyway, they're failing.
Yeah. No, that's a nice point to finish on. As I said, we're not here to invalidate the fact that you may have dealt with someone horrible in real life. But yeah, as I said, hopefully if you're living in this the horrible Twitter timeline. Twitter might be really different by the time you listen to this anyway, but if you're experiencing that, hopefully there's some nice practical advice there. But if you have any thoughts on this topic, get in touch with us, nbspodcast@gmail.com or nbs_podcast on Instagram.
And do remember that we're always here as well. So if you would like some support or anything, I'm sure we can offer some of that out in the podcast or direct you to people who can help you as well.
Yeah, exactly. And if you check us out on Instagram, they've got our personal handles all linked to that as well. So, you know, you can, if one of the voices you've heard today have really resonated with you and you're like, yeah, really want to speak to that person. Yeah, I imagine you get a lot of message requests maybe, but anyway, we're always happy to chat. Don't forget to rate, like, subscribe, share this podcast with anyone that might be interested. But thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.